This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This afternoon, Berklee College of Music President Roger Brown suspended his annual State of the School speech and instead held a campus-wide meeting to discuss the issue of sexual assault. The meeting follows last week's revelations in the Boston Globe that several Berklee students said they were assaulted by teachers at the school and that Berklee administrators allowed those professors to quietly leave. Hundreds of students marched in protest before today's forum. Some held signs demanding zero tolerance. Here's freshman Sabrina Bondar.
It happened quickly, and Berklee, it seemed like they were just trying to cover it up and then get it in the past. And us students want to say that that's not okay and this needs to be talked about so it can be prevented in the future.
Well, inside the packed Berklee Performance Center, President Roger Brown acknowledged that the school has terminated 11 faculty members in the past 13 years for abusive behavior. "It's unacceptable. It breaks my heart. And I'm sorry," Brown said. "We're going to root out abusive behavior and we're not going to tolerate it." Meanwhile, Massachusetts political leaders are reviewing their sexual harassment policies, again, following reporting from the Globe about rampant cultures of sexism and harassment at the State House. Now, one woman who's experienced that harassment has agreed to speak with us. She says she's been sexually harassed by three different lawmakers. "We've agreed to grant her anonymity because she still meets with lawmakers regularly at the State House and is concerned about possible retribution. But she's here and joins us now. Thank you for speaking with us."
Thanks for having me.
Let me just first ask you, how are you feeling about doing this?
Really nervous.
Yeah? And I mean, I guess there are obvious reasons why, but why?
I think the biggest reason is that I worry that someone's going to find out who I am, and that'll have repercussions either for myself, my professional career going forward, or other people that I work with, mm-hmm. and potentially even my employer.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that Yvonne Abraham wrote about in her column, that maybe it's a testament to how significant the problem is that people are still worried to this day about talking openly about their experiences on Beacon Hill. So because of that, I just want to say thank you again for being willing to come in and talk with us. I mean, can you describe to us what happened?
Sure. So I had three separate incidents between 2009 and 2014, all of which occurred when I was pregnant, because apparently that's when it's open season to talk about someone's sex life. I was never cornered or hurt or threatened. I experienced one experience of inappropriate touching on my thigh during an in-district meeting. We were sitting in a restaurant booth, and I was sort of on the inside of the booth. And the legislator, who is no longer in the State House, kept putting his hand on my thigh and my pregnant belly. My boss was actually sitting across from us, but she didn't know because it was sort of underneath the table.
So you weren't working for the legislator?
I wasn't working for the legislator, no. I was working for an organization.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And I just kind of kept moving his hand, and then the meeting ended, and that was sort of it.
Do you mind if asking?
Yeah.
So he was just sort of, I mean, I suppose no one ever asks when they can just touch someone, but he didn't ask for anything? He was just like under the table grabbing your leg?
Yeah. Yes, he was just touching me.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was nothing really I could do. The meeting was just kind of continuing.
As this was going
as
on.
As it was happening.
So what was going through your mind?
Like, what on earth is happening right now?
Yeah.
Why is he touching me? And what do I do? Because I was sort of trapped on the inside of a booth, and I was pretty pregnant. I felt like there was nothing I could really do.
And then after the meeting ended?
It just ended, and we shook hands. He did turn to my boss at the very end of the meeting and say, "You've got a great girl there."
Okay.
And that was it.
Were you able to talk to your boss then about
it? I didn't, actually. I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything when it happened, and I didn't say anything later. I talked about it with other female friends who work in Massachusetts politics. And it was sort of like, oh, yeah, that's happened to me.
Just kind of matter of fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I ask you why you felt you couldn't talk to your then female boss?
You know, it's interesting. I think when I first started that job, she had indicated to me that there would be people in the state house who would sexualize situations that were otherwise political and professional. And I just sort of, it was, you know, one of my first jobs doing this kind of work. I was transitioning careers to do advocacy work. And it just sort of felt like it was par for the course, just kind of part of that world. And so I just sort of felt like my experience was in that vein.
So I feel like this is one of the things that, about Beacon Hill specifically, that your story and other stories that have been told recently have really opened our eyes to, that for years, this kind of behavior was, it was not unknown, and that people sort of tried to manage around it. I mean, does that make you think that, I mean, obviously in a sense it was kind of accepted?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issue is that it's really kind of part of the culture on Beacon Hill and in politics in general. I think you're hearing stories like this that are coming out from around the country where it's part of working in politics.
Why do you think that is? Is it because there's so many men? Is it about political power? What is it?
I think it's a few things. I think, you know, it's a very male-dominated field. I think a lot of times in politics, like in the arts, there's this kind of blend of the social and the work. So a lot of times you're having meetings during the day and you're kind of hustling to get something passed or to work on legislation, and then there's drinks afterwards that are kind of part of that scene as well. A lot of things happen in those social settings that are political and can affect what happens the next day on the state house floor. I think there's a strong culture in the state house around sexism, that there's this constant situation of very powerful men and very vulnerable young women who are kind of trying to climb a ladder.
Tell me more about that.
Particularly in Beacon Hill, men engage in what I would describe as sort of casual sexism all the time. You know, the young men who seek to work for them, who work for them and eventually want to be in those positions of power, kind of seek to emulate it. Mm-hmm. And so it keeps happening. And I think young women who either work for them or work with them don't have recourse. They don't have a voice.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of anyone? I mean, would you categorize what happened to you as assault?
You know, it's funny. Even now, I really struggle putting that label on it. I mean, I think, you know, in another time, it would have been locker room talk. And that's become kind of acceptable, certainly inside the state house and I guess for a lot of voters.
Right. So you said that three things had happened to you, and you described one of them. Can you just tell us about the other two?
Sure. So I think, again, because I was pregnant, I had one experience where a legislator speculated out loud to me about the possible sexual positions I was in to get pregnant. It was like a really quick comment, and like he kind of moved on really quickly. Yeah, it was one of those, I went back to the office, like, you'll never guess what so-and-so said to me. And then the third one was actually really surprising for me, actually even more surprising than the experience of touching. I was in a legislative meeting, so I was asking a legislator to support a specific proposal that I was working on, and I didn't know whether I was having a boy or a girl, and he told me that I must be having a boy because when you're pregnant with a girl, you start to look really unattractive and ugly, and there's nothing about me that was ugly. And he was staring at my breasts, which he lingered on for a minute with his eyes, and then he turned to his aide, who was standing right there, and said, "Aren't I right?"
Mm.
And I think the reason that one was so shocking to me is because there was someone else in the room.
Mm-hmm.
There was a peer who was standing right there and just didn't, you know, say or do anything.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm reflecting on what you were saying a minute ago about how the way business is done on Beacon Hill, it involves both sort of the formal day-to-day business on Beacon Hill plus the more sort of social and perhaps informal interactions that are part of politics. I mean, it's a fact, but also part of what allows this problem to perpetuate. House Speaker Robert DeLeo has said that he's going to take a closer look at this and look at policies and procedures. Governor Baker has said the same thing. I'm just wondering if you think that's enough, or are there specific things that can and should be done beyond sort of an evaluation of sexual harassment policies and training?
Yeah, I don't think that the suggestions that we've heard so far really get to that deeper cultural issue of what's happening inside the State House, because I really think that even if the State House kind of puts in place a program to try to talk a little bit more about sexual harassment, I think that will help to a small degree, but it doesn't address the culture of sexism that exists inside the building. Yeah, I feel like there's more that can be done to elevate the conversation.
Do you have particular ideas?
Honestly, I think that the State House needs a person whose job it is to be a resource for anybody who is inside the building, for legislators, for staff and aides who work inside the building, for lobbyists and advocates who are coming in from outside of the building, and even for constituents if they have issues that they need to talk about. Anyone who interacts with the State House should have access to that person. And I think that person, it should be clearly marked all over the building, like, this position exists, and if you have an issue,
mm-hmm.
this is who you should talk to about it.
And nothing like that currently does exist.
No. There are sort of HR professionals inside the State House, but at least to my knowledge, there's no one person whose job it is to kind of play this role inside the State House. The speakers talked about annual sexual harassment training. I think that's important. I think it also needs to be a part of the lobbying registration, so that every year when you register as a lobbyist, this is also part of your ethics training. Bystander training on sexism and sexual assault and what to do if you see it or you're experiencing it, how you support your colleagues and coworkers so that people kind of learn the words to say to kind of call it out and report it. And then I think the speaker and the Senate president have said, we don't tolerate this behavior at all. But I think making that zero tolerance policy much clearer, again, for anybody who interacts with the building is important. I think it sends a clear message that this is something that we're going to constantly be addressing inside the State House.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, though, what that zero tolerance policy would look like if actually enacted upon, right? Like, what does it mean? Like, if a lobbyist engaged in inappropriate behavior, would that person be no longer allowed to lobby on Beacon Hill? What happens if it's a representative?
The ethics laws in Massachusetts are pretty clear that if you violate the ethics laws around lobbying, there are consequences that can be taken. I think we would need to spell that out. In terms of elected officials, I think, you know, it's really challenging. We've seen legislators leave for really egregious offenses.
Mm-hmm.
I think some state houses are bringing in outside resources, either external investigators or even in some instances prosecutors, to really do a deep dive and see what they can do. But it's not, we don't have to answer that question alone. There are other people who are working to figure that out.
Yeah.
And we should be part of that conversation.
Yeah. Two more questions, if I could. One is that, you know, what would you say to the folks out there who are listening, who may feel sympathetic and say, yeah, I can understand how those interactions that you had made you uncomfortable. But in their minds, it doesn't actually seem all that serious.
I feel the same way. I mean, honestly, these aren't things that keep me up at night. I never felt afraid. I never felt threatened. But I've had conversations with women who've had experiences where they have felt afraid or threatened or that they kind of had to go along with something because their job was on the line. And I think I needed to talk about my experiences so that I could give other women the opportunity to talk about their experiences. I'm a little older now. I don't think I would react the same way if I had the same experiences. I'm in a more senior position in my own job, so I'm also not in the building as often. But there are women who still work in the State House who are really vulnerable to things like this because the culture still exists. I think that's particularly true for women of color who are working in politics, who might not feel like they have a voice to come forward.
So you want to make, you're trying to make the space for that.
Yep. I think somebody needed to come out and say something so that there's an opportunity for other women to say something.
Yeah. You know, the last question on my mind sort of drifts back to where we started about the culture on Beacon Hill as you see it. You occasionally do have to go and work with legislators, right?
Yeah.
And
do you have relatively often.
Yeah, and you have a team as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I have a team.
I mean, what do you advise them? Do you talk about this with them?
We've started talking about it a lot more. That's for sure. I definitely have asked women who have worked for me whether there were any legislators they didn't feel comfortable meeting with in the building.
Have you ever received a yes answer to that?
Always.
Still, to this day?
Of course.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your thoughts on sort of a way forward here out of this problem. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me and for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
WBUR granted this woman anonymity because even though she's older and feels a bit more confident, as she said, she still meets with legislators as part of her job and remains concerned about potential ramifications. Now, once again, House Speaker Robert DeLeo has ordered a comprehensive review of the House's sexual harassment policies, and he has asked for recommendations on how to improve them. And if anyone else would like to share their story, you can go to our website, radioboston.org. There's information there on how to contact us securely, or you can reach out to me via Twitter. I'm at MegnaWBUR. You can see there's information on how to contact me securely in my Twitter bio. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.